Yes, sir, we promised you a great main event here tonight.
WrestleMania!
WrestleMania in front of us!
Wow, wow, wow. When you hear that, you know what time it is. It's time for Cheap Heat. And an interesting week for Cheap Heat because we didn't know, you know, exactly what was going on in terms of when are they coming? But here we are. The number as high, I think, is 75th ranked sports and recreation podcast in the world. And I am Peter Rosenberg. I'm joined by Uptown Malcolm, Stat Guy Greg.
Yes. Happy to be in the building.
And you know it's a big, only twice a year edition when you see the Brian Dipperstein in the building.
I'm here. I'm wearing a suit. I'm embracing the gimmick 100%.
Confirmed. Yeah, and it is. You are borderline casual Friday dip today.
I have no tie. I feel nude. I feel naked. Please don't look at my neck.
But everyone, there's a lot to do, a lot to get to. Obviously tonight, they're saying rain. Dipperstein's scared. I'm not scared. I know the Peckerheads will come out no matter what. 9:30, 176 Ludlow at 9:30 p.m. The Ludlow Coffee Supply. It is a low-key cafe, as you can tell. Threw something together because the 2K event that I was going to try to do with the guests, it just logistically became impossible. So we're doing the heat and greet. We have 100 of the shirts. I'm wearing the new shirt, Greg.
It looks beautiful.
It's Mage.
Yeah.
Confirmed Mage. But there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the world of professional wrestling. First of all, okay. Outside of the ring, obviously there's only one story to talk about. And it was a very, very scary week when we heard the news that Ric Flair was in a really, really bad way. And it appeared that what Rick was dealing with was he went into the hospital last weekend for a severe stomach pain, and it ended up becoming just a whole thing, really a whole thing. And it's now led to they had to remove things and give him a pacemaker, and his heart hasn't been good. And I'm happy to report that by the time you're hearing this, there is, without going into details, definitive improvement today. Definitive improvement. I hear that from people directly in the hospital that things are better today than they were yesterday and the day before. The details of which I'm sure will come out, but it's better. And for that, we say, I'm starting to believe, guys, that Ric Flair is going to kick out. I'm starting to believe, and I will tell you, I did not always believe this week that Rick would kick out. Early in the week, the way I described it in the group chat, I think, was it was a best of three falls between the Natch and the Grim Reap. And he lost the first fall 100%. And the second fall, which was the surgery, he beat him. He beat him with a roll-up, snuck out of the ring, 1-1. And now here we are, Ric Flair fighting for his life, and he's fighting his ass off. And I think we're seeing positive gain here from the Natch. And I'll tell you what, though. I really hope that Flair lives through this, not only because I want him around in this world for longer, but also so we can talk with him afterwards about how Mage he was when this news broke. I mean, this news
he was everywhere.
I mean, I was wearing a Flair shirt in L.A., and I was getting stopped by everybody. Yeah, did you hear what happened to Ric Flair? I mean, everyone was talking. Number one trending topic in the world. Number one story on the sidebar on ESPN. It was just something everyone was talking about. And some of the best memes I've ever seen. People like just, you like see what people were tweeting?
No.
Oh my, people were like, 2017, if you dare take Ric Flair from us. Like people were like, everyone's like saying, this better be Ric Flair in the hospital room right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows the gif of him in a hospital dancing around in a hospital. Like there are all these just gifs of him doing amazing Flair things. So, you know, it's a scary, scary time. That's right.
As I walked out of New York City today, every woman within 100 yards was hollering, here comes the boss. And Bruce Springsteen was nowhere to be seen.
That's the Nate. I love the guy. I was with him just 2 weeks ago. He's a major. It really does make you think he's number one. You start feeling like, is he just number one?
He's number one 100%.
Right?
How about that? Number one, a hundo.
Well, hold on. You're not going to suggest, Greg, publicly on this podcast, that if, God forbid, my all-time favorite wrestler also, this gets lost a lot in the podcast, mm-hmm. my favorite all-time wrestler also, Bret Hart, if, God forbid, he was in a medical situation, you don't think the story would be as big as it is for Ric Flair?
What are your thoughts?
I don't think the story would be as big as it is for Ric Flair, but I also don't think that that matters. Because like I said, for me, when I rank my wrestlers, I don't rank everything else as equally as I rank what happens
in the ring. Well, you know what Ric Flair says to that?
I don't know what that cost. I'd be ashamed to wear it.
He doesn't know what that cost. He'd be ashamed to wear it. And you know what else?
My shoes cost more than your house.
Well, how much were the shoes if they cost more than someone's house? No, but here's the thing about Flair that makes him unlike Hogan, right? Because if you say Hogan's the greatest ever, you know, you're talking about, I mean, I do think he was really good in ring and stuff like that, but you're really talking about his just fame and impact.
Mm-hmm.
But Flair is a great choice for, let me put it this way. Greg, would you ever disparage anyone who had Flair's number one all time?
No.
Not at all. So you totally respect it. You just have Bret as yours.
Yeah.
And I just think Flair is the combo of everything. He's also the smart choice, right? Like, he also has a little bit of that. Hogan's the super mainstream choice. Like, oh, I don't watch wrestling, but I know Hulk Hogan. Flair, you say, means I know a little bit. And, right.
and
I right know thing. He's really That's the right. best.
He's good enough in all the categories that you can see him, like, overall.
I know.
As somebody's
cultural impact, skill in ring, skill on mic. Dip, you're looking at Greg. What do you want to say?
Longevity.
I would say that he's probably the George Washington on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. Does that make sense? Or is Hogan?
No. I think Flair.
I think Flair is.
I mean, unless it's like Lou Fez, unless it's like Gorgeous George. I mean, I never know
George
how to do
that. George Hackenschmidt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing. When you do your Mount Rushmore, do you include the guys who were iconic 70 years ago?
George Hackenschmuck?
Like, that's the thing. Is Hackenschmidt there? Hackenschmuck? You're burying him 100%.
George Hackenschmidt.
Like, I don't know if people do that, because it seems like that gets.
But also, like, everything that we have from those guys is gone. They're not on film, and anything that is on film is, like, boring and clunky. And
who's the guy next to Washington? Who is it?
Is it Teddy Roosevelt?
Is it
Lincoln?
Next to him, I think it's Washington.
Jefferson.
Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Roosevelt.
Okay.
Correct?
So it's Flair, Stone Cold, Hulk Hogan. Andre.
Well, I know how that guy Greg feels about that. Yeah, that's not good.
If Ric Flair,
John Cena
is if Ric Flair is George Washington, then Bret Hart has to be Lincoln.
Bret Hart's Lincoln.
Bret Hart is in the Lincoln spot.
He could be Lincoln. Lincoln and Jace.
Lincoln ushered in a new era for America, and also Bret Hart ushered in the Attitude Era and was the face of the new generation.
It's a very good point.
Bret Hart has an African American wife and can be seen. He can be seen wearing Jordans. If you go back to, like, 85, Bret Hart has on a pair of, like, the OG Jordan 1s. So he's been immersed in the culture. He's famously at WrestleMania 11 hugged up on by Salt and Pepper.
Wow. The details.
He's in the community. He's as close to one of us as you could get before you start getting to the New Day and, like, the actual megastar. So if we're going to say that Flair is Washington, then Bret Hart is Lincoln and there's nobody that even comes close.
Oh, God, you're such a mark.
The man loves Bret Hart.
The mark of the millenn.
There's no denying.
He's been hiding in plain sight. He's been one of us this whole time.
this is the nature boy, Ric Flair, in the Big Apple, hanging out with my buddy, my main man, Peter Rosenberg. We are rocking it out today. As a matter of fact, we're going to rock it out all day today and all night tonight. Loving New York. Loving Peter Rosenberg. Remember, I am a kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, Peter is too, limousine-riding, jet-flying, son of a gun, and over the course of this weekend, we're going to kiss so many women in New York and make them cry. Woo! Peter Rosenberg, the Nate. Woo, woo, woo!
I mean, I've been with him for the last 2 days. He's been kissing women 100%.
All right, guys, so we send our love and prayers to the Nature Boy. We are not ready to lose the Nate.
Baruch Hashem.
That's right. Thank you. That means bless God. Dip doesn't even know what it means, but he said it 100%.
I have no idea.
So I would say the biggest thing that happened in terms of in the world of professional wrestling would be Baron Corbin losing his Money in the Bank briefcase. Do we agree?
Yeah. Sorry I had to break it to you like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do you want to address this now, Dipperstein?
I'm going to address this right now. We have our group chat. We have our Jew World Order group chat.
That's right.
And I'm on the West Coast, so I'm constantly I'm sitting there at my desk, slaving away at my job, agenting like a lunatic all day long.
Dip, what should your theme song be? Because this is like you cutting a promo, and I don't know what your.
I leave it to you. I trust you 100%.
All right, hold on, let me see if I got something.
I trust you with Jay's.
All right.
So anyway, I'm slaving over my job all day, and I am constantly having to avoid my phone. Now the song's made, confirmed.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Brian Dipperstein. Seems like he has some words for Uptown Malcolm.
Listen, Uptown, okay?
He's making his way to the ring right now to address.
Don't you ever, break a SmackDown Live storyline to me while I am sitting at work, slaving away at my job. The little joy I have in my extremely busy life, to quote my text.
He's cutting a promo.
Comes from watching wrestling. 100%. It's all I have. It's all I have, Uptown.
Well, Uptown is not a man to take this sitting down. Here he is. Uptown Malcolm making his way out to respond to these harsh words from the Dipperstein. The question is how he responds. Here he is.
Breaking news is breaking news, Dip. I'm sorry. If you love this business, as much as you say you love this business.
This is too far. I'm shocked to see
you
this.
Will follow the results.
I don't have a TV in my office, okay? Wow. I don't have a television in my office.
Confirmed lie. I've seen the TV 100%.
It's gone. It's gone.
You got rid of it?
It's gone. By the way, it was my college TV.
It was a Repug TV.
From 2004.
Well, then he is slaving away, and now I apologize.
A better time. 2004, a better time.
Anyways, so guys, that spoiler did happen. Now, Dipperstein then ruins it even further by telling me that, and I found this online as well, that supposedly it may be punishment for Corbin because he's been tweeting things. I don't know.
I heard this last night too. I didn't hear this at that point.
For the sake of having fun here, I don't really feel like talking about it in context of that, and it's also speculation. It's definitely not confirmed at all. It's literally just reading into the situation. So, why do you guys think, from a story standpoint, Baron Corbin could have lost the Money in the Bank briefcase?
From a story standpoint, I have no idea. From a story standpoint, it makes no sense to me, honestly.
I mean, you know how I feel about I love them all. But
you don't like Baron Corbin?
I don't like him at all.
No, you're not a fan?
I'm not a fan. I don't like
him. You think he has one of the weirdest belly buttons in the business today?
It's the strangest belly button in the biz today, confirmed.
Well, big storyline here. That's a headline right now on Raja later on today. Dipperstein attacks Baron Corbin's belly button.
I mean, look at it. It's horizontal. Have you ever seen something like this? What are your thoughts?
So
I'm with you 100% though on Baron Corbin.
He's just not he's not mage. And I never thought he was a main eventer when he first came in. I remember at NXT a few years ago, you know, people chanting, "Who are you? Who are you?" I mean, I still kind of feel that way.
I enjoyed his NXT stuff, and I thought when he first came in there was potential, but he's not who I thought he was, and I'm abandoning ship.
I like his punches. I like his clothesline.
You're abandoning ship 100%.
100%.
You were on the ship, I remember.
Oh, he was absolutely on the ship. Yeah. I've never been a big Corbin guy. And I don't fully understand how it benefits this weekend to not have the briefcase.
It feels forced. I mean,
I liked the surprise of it. I did like the surprise of it. Although this drives me crazy. Since when does the ref have to make sure the champ is like up and ready to fight? That's not how this works.
Yeah.
The Money in the Bank briefcase should be you.
Actually, I feel like they did do that with Cena and Edge. They made sure he got. Yeah, they waited until he got to his feet.
It was weird, though, when he turned around and he had to, like, go and then punch Cena out of the ring to then deal with Jinder.
Well, that was the distraction, though. He got thrown off worrying about John Cena, thinking, oh, I can get rid of him real quick, not realizing once Jinder lost the match, he was playing possum because he knew Corbin was out there. So he acts like he's more hurt by the attitude adjustment than he was, lays out hoping he'll cash in, taking advantage and stealing the briefcase. Now Jinder Mahal, if he gets past Nakamura this weekend, doesn't have to worry about Baron Corbin.
That's what I like about the failed cash-in, is that this specter of a possible Baron Corbin championship run is no longer hanging over our heads.
That is a very good point.
That ring psychology was mage, though, Peter.
Which one? That I just used?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Major.
I mean, that's what I think the logic is. And so then Cena comes up, provides a distraction, and now Corbin's finished. I liked Cena. I liked getting to see Cena work as the non-champion against Jinder. That was interesting. I think they need a little more work. Look, there were parts of it that were a little rough. But I think they could be good together. I do think Jinder and Cena could be good together. I loved Dip and I both popped for the test of strength to start match.
I loved it too.
I mean, he doesn't like that.
I don't know when the last time I saw that was, but it's one of those things that they used to do all the time when I was younger that was always good.
One of my favorite moments of all time, is the Warrior Hogan test of strength at Mania 6. It's one of the best moments ever. It's like it like defined my childhood as far as my markdom when I was that age. That was like the first moment I truly remember getting chills.
Oh, yeah.
Watching wrestling.
This is a moment.
It was a moment confirmed.
100% moment.
It was 3-year-old Dipperstein moment, 100%.
Yeah, on Fleek. So I enjoyed it. And this weekend now, they'll have to change the graphic. All those graphics had Corbin like holding his briefcase. It is now a briefcaseless Baron Corbin. And you know what it does, though? This guarantees to me that Carmella very soon is cashing in and winning the title.
You think on Sunday soon?
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too.
I think Carmella's champion on Sunday.
Who does she cash in on, though?
Naomi.
I think so, too. I think if Naomi wins, Carmella's cashing in on her. And if Natty wins,
I'm telling you
no
right
cashing.
Now, I already know what's happening. And by the way, I won't be mad at it. I think it's a great way to do it. They have a great match. And after the match, Natalya hits her with the sharpshooter and just completely takes her out. And then Carmella comes in and gets it. And in fact...
Bless you.
Excuse me. In fact, you know what I don't mind at all? I don't mind if Carmella comes in after Natalya breaks down Naomi, gets the title, and then Natalya becomes her muscle.
I mean, that'd be great.
So then Carmella not only has annoying James Ellsworth, but muscle Natalya with her too.
By the way, that was great sneeze recovery. It takes me 20 minutes to recover from a sneeze like that. Oh, my God.
You're a professional.
This is what I do.
You're a professional broadcaster.
What do you have to do after you sneeze?
I'm pacing around. I'm touching my nose. I'm huffing and puffing. It takes
a lot.
Making sure there's no residue.
It takes me 20 minutes to recover from that kind of sneeze.
I understand. Well, I have a certain way that I sneeze when I know I need to get through it. You know, you have to push it more into like a cough, the huh kind of sneeze, as opposed to the shh through the nose kind of sneeze. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course. I have an incredible sneeze control.
Okay. But still, the recovery's not good.
My recovery's terrible.
It's a disgrace. Now, I will tell you this right now. If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I don't know, it's going to rain tonight. Do I really need to go see these schmohawks? I'll just tell you this. You see what the shirt is, the new shirt. You've seen it on social media. You see who's featured in the shirt. Probably have good reason to think that the people who are featured on the shirt will be in attendance for the release
at
of the
least,
shirt.
At the very least.
Wouldn't you think?
I don't know.
So.
I don't know.
You're not sure? We'll see. Kayfabe only.
Mm-hmm.
Confirmed. That's right. All right. Also, other major takeaways from this go-home show. Did you just rub his face?
I rubbed it.
Wow.
I rubbed
100%.
Very odd.
Why was that odd?
What?
I can't rub another man's
face? Taking a finger and just one finger rub on the face?
I wanted to see how thick his beard was.
Well, now you know because you rubbed it yourself. What other major takeaways from the week in professional wrestling, which is what we talk about here on the podcast?
But
wrestling.
We're watching it.
We're still watching wrestling, mm-hmm. Yeah. The Hulk Hogan kind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You used to watch.
I watched when I was a kid, when I was in middle school. I remember.
Who did you watch?
I remember Sable. Remember Sable?
Wow. Sable?
With the beautiful breasts.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she's married to Brock Lesnar, so you probably want to be careful. You know who Brock Lesnar is, right?
Who?
Brock Lesnar.
He's the UFC guy.
No. He's WWE guy. He's actually the Universal Champion.
I remember when I was watching it, I think there was like talk of him coming into the, like in like early 2000s, and that's kind of when it all petered out for me.
Oh, you stopped watching.
I did.
Grew up.
I did.
Who else did you like as a kid?
Who was the guy with he was like pale and he came out and his gimmick, he walked slow to the ring. He walked really slow to the ring.
Undertaker.
Right. And he had the other guy with him. He was like the
chubby guy. You just pulled a Frank the Clown in terms of not knowing how to play this game. by saying gimmick. You can't say gimmick. You can't say gimmick if you haven't been into wrestling in 15 years. You can't pull out gimmick. All right, Greg, what major takeaways from this weekend, this go-home week for SummerSlam?
I thought it was odd.
Because you didn't bring notes, did you?
I did not.
Of course.
I thought this is the new era. We don't need to be confined
That's
and restricted.
Right. Very good point.
To results and notes and
That's
things
right.
of that nature. I thought it was odd, though, that they gave us two matches that had been advertised for SummerSlam on Raw.
Okay. That is an interesting thought. Which ones were there?
The Cruiserweight Championship match, Neville and Akira Tozawa.
And although we get a new champion in Akira Tozawa.
We did, and that was big for the Titus brand. We needed that one.
You said we.
He needed that one.
And by the way, do you have Black Power rankings today?
I do have Black Power rankings.
Okay. Well, that is at least one thing we need to do. And someone gave me a good suggestion. Do you want to get into them right now since you brought that up?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it right now.
All right. You sure you have it prepared?
I have it right here
See, that really lets me know that you not only do not do stats, but you don't even do, even when we're doing a joking bit, you don't even prepare.
I have them right here.
All right, real quick, what was the other match? Before we get to the Black Power rankings, the other match.
Finn and Bray.
Finn and Bray with the pig's blood.
Yeah, you touched on that last week when you mentioned that Finn might need to lose as Finn to bring out the demon. So it's perfect.
Demon's coming 100%.
By the way, that's the second time this week that pig's blood is in the news. Because, you know, with the Trump and the bullets and the pig blood. Did you watch the news this morning?
I saw that he said something about pig's blood.
There was a pig's blood comment 100%.
Oh, there's a pig's blood twice.
I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now, but
we don't wanna, please.
If you Google pig's blood, you'll see Trump and then Finn Balor.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Stat Guy Greg's Black Power Rankings.
I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm blacker than black, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm blacker than black, and I'm black, y'all. I'm blickety black, blacker than black, black, I'm blacker than black, yo, because I'm black and I'm black. Yo, I'm black and I'm black, y'all, and I'm blacker than black, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm blacker than black, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm blickety black, 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 black.
All right, SGG. Shout out to the user who suggested how he's like, how is your theme song not I'm Black Y'all from CB4? And I was like, you know what? You are absolutely right. So from now on, Greg, top five. So,
honorable mention, though, goes to Shelton Benjamin, who hasn't been seen since he was supposed to debut on SmackDown. But there are rumblings of him having signed a contract with WWE.
Craziest thing about that is I read that as well. I read that same thing this morning, and last night as I went to bed, I was watching an IC title match between Shelton Benjamin and guess who? Because they did it 70 times. That's right. I was watching some vintage 05 Carlito versus Shelton Benjamin, and I thought, damn it, I wonder if he's really going to come back, and I wonder how good he could still be. And now the rumor is the contract is signed. If I see Shelton Benjamin backstage this weekend, pop galore if I see him. All right, so he's your honorable mention.
Yes.
All right, number five.
In at number five, I'm going to have to go with Raw announcer King Booker.
King Booker!
He's running for mayor of Houston, and the Undefeated wrote an excellent article on him and about his life, his upbringing, and his upcoming mayoral run. He's since buried the article, but the article is mage, and he's mage.
Well, hold on, why did he bury the article?
He sent out a tweet that said, you know, the article was good, but it was some fabrications.
Fabrication?
Oh, I hate fabrication.
So,
all right, who's in at number four?
In at number four is The New Day. They had another great match with the Usos on SmackDown Live, but they got to go down to number four because they lost that match, and we can't have that. But it sets up an excellent match this Sunday again. Big E and Kofi Kingston against the Usos. Or excuse me, Big E and Xavier Woods with Kofi in the corner against the Usos.
Mage.
In at number three, the Street Profits.
Wow, the Street Profits.
Yes. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about this gimmick, but after watching them 2 weeks in a row, I'm on the bandwagon. I'm in. Confirmed.
Wow, confirmed bandwagon for the Street Profits. Dip is right there with you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You're a big Street Profit guy.
I'm the biggest Street Profit guy in the biz today.
Yeah, I love him.
Now, I like it because even though this is sort of like a black gimmick,
yeah,
it is at least a it's a positive black gimmick. Would
it's
you
fun.
Agree?
I think it's fun.
Right? Like it's like the handshakes, the Twitter talk. Like it's there's no real negative to it. They seem straight.
I can see some negatives to it, but I'm not gonna lie. I'm personally having fun with it. So while I can see what people are saying. What are people saying?
Just tell us.
Just it's.
And by the way, you're the voice of the Black Power rankings. Everyone follows after you.
People seem to say that it feels like another stereotype. Like it's the second coming of Crime Time. And I can.
Whoa, that's a far cry from Crime Time.
I can kind of see that,
but hold on. There's qualities that you would say are stereotypically black.
Yeah.
But Crime Time was bad because it was stereotypically black criminal.
Right.
That's what made that offensive. But these guys are just kind of cool athlete dudes. Like that is to me what the gimmick is.
Yeah, that's what
like
I get from it too.
The way they carry themselves, right? And I'm not saying there's
you got a basketball player and a football player.
Exactly.
I would flip it though. The guy who's the basketball player, I would make him the football player and vice
in terms versus. Of how they're actually described, you mean?
Yeah.
In their bio. But that to me they just seem like athletes.
I think they'd be great to feud with Breezango and have like a social media selfie war.
That's not a bad idea at all. Now they're a long way, I think, from main roster. They're a ways away.
A boy can dream. Yeah.
They look like two really great athletes who are pretty good. But I think we're hanging with them in NXT for year and a half. I think
yeah, at least
they'll be there for a while.
They got to show up at Brooklyn on like the pre-show. You know how they tape.
You think they will?
I think because they tape the next week's episode of NXT from Brooklyn. So you got to think they're gonna have them on that, and then they'll run through NXT for a year. And then they'll get another big pop at Brooklyn after, you know, being more exposed and pushed better. And then they'll bring them up to the main roster.
How long has AOP been in NXT?
A while.
Yeah.
It has. Oh, wow. You know I love AOP, too.
It's almost time, right?
Yeah.
It's almost AOP
It's almost time.
Time
for Sanity.
It's almost.
We were talking about that last night.
Yeah.
It's time for them, you know.
I mean, AOP,
one of them is staying because one of them is going to be champion.
Right.
Team champion.
Here's the other question when we get to NXT. Oh, we didn't finish the Black Power rankings. So far, you're all over the place. You've put in, hold on, real quick, update to recap everyone where we are so far.
Honorable mention, Shelton Benjamin,
who we don't even know if is signed to a WWE contract.
But he's back in the news, so we got to give him his respect. This might be the one week that he's in the news, and we're just going to gloss over
Very
it.
Good point.
Honorable
all right.
mention.
Number five, you have a man who hasn't wrestled a match in 5 years.
It's all right.
He's King Booker.
We see him every week. He's mage. He's ranked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number four.
New Day.
We have New Day. Okay, they're at least active wrestlers.
They took a loss.
Number three, we have an NXT tag team with two matches under their belt.
They are undefeated.
All right, time for the top two in the Black Power rankings, according to SGG.
Titus O'Neil.
All right. The Titus brand I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, the Titus brand is strong right now.
Wait, was that number one?
That's number two.
Oh.
Titus brand is strong right now. He did what he said he was going to do. He brought somebody to a championship from the depths of obscurity. You know, no disrespect to Akira Tozawa. He's a great athlete, but I mean, come on.
And who is number one?
Number one is a three-way tie between SmackDown Women's Champion, Naomi. Okay. Number one contender for the Raw Women's Championship, Sasha Banks. And number one contender for the NXT Championship, Ember Moon.
That's what I was looking for right there.
Together,
you're on an Ember Moon dip. You're a huge Ember fan.
Together, these three women made history. This is the first time, you know, you have three women's championships on the line, three one-on-one matches, and they all feature an African-American woman. So,
and this is the Black Power rankings after all.
It is, and they couldn't do it without each other. They made history this week, and I'm wishing all of them luck.
Wow. Saturday and Sunday. What a moment.
I think they should start selling the contacts.
Oh, yeah.
For Ember Moon.
I am predicting a big weekend for Miss Banks. Big weekend for Miss Banks.
Finally, she needs one.
But I got to tell you, I only want the big weekend to happen if they have a mage match. Like, let me put it this way. If Sasha goes over without them, like, doing something awesome, it's a waste to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might as well keep building Alexa Bliss and making her make this, like, heel champion more of a thing.
I mean, they've had several matches in NXT, and
they can go.
Yeah,
and like they didn't hype. If I'm WWE, I hype up more leading into this week. Highlights from the Great Balls of Fire match, including when Sasha jumped on her off the table after the match. Like I would have shown like, and shown NXT stuff. You know what? Maybe they'll have in the package. They need to, before the match, have like a five-minute package showing all the way back. I would show Sasha Banks when she was on Bring It to the Table with yours truly. I would show all those things to get us to that place. By the way, shout out to Big Cass who came in today.
I saw that.
He's 7 feet tall. Actually, about 6'10". Dip, the whole interview was not kayfabe only, though. So I don't think you would
have. Thank God I wasn't here. My head would have exploded like Mars Attacks.
Now, one of the other wrestling rumors that is out there this week is that the reason that Enzo is being put in the Shark Tank is because he's scared of heights. Did you read that, SG?
I did read that.
I asked Cass if he knows if that is a fact or not. And he said in the years that he's known him, he's never known that to be a thing.
I feel like I heard
But then Enzo... he said, I hope that it is true, though. K-fab.
Okay, thank God.
I feel like I heard Enzo say that he was afraid of heights in ring in a promo before.
I think so, too. I think he may have said it. Was it in the first promo, like at this time when he was like giving his whole Frank Sinatra spiel?
I think it might have been. I think he said, like, even though I'm afraid of heights, I let you put me above your head and throw me onto my opponents.
Yeah, maybe. By the way, if that's true, I mean,
he's going up way higher than 7 feet if that's true.
Yo, how mean would it be if they just keep going up and up? And like, if he goes up to like the top of the arena, like where the banners are.
I know. I'm here to be a friend to Enzo Amore.
I love Enzo Amore. Please, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm going to put that on the record right now. Enzo, I am your friend. I am here to be your friend. You're mishpuch, and that's that.
I love Enzo. He's a good man. I'm going to tell you this right now. I really do think that Enzo's quote-unquote heat, I understand where, and I'm giving you guys some inside baseball right here. I understand where some of it comes from. Like we talked about on Bring It to the Table, Enzo is Enzo all the time, all right? And I get that. But he's a good dude. You know, he's his heart and his intentions, I think, are really good. Now, does he talk a lot and probably talk about Enzo a lot? Yeah, I think so. I'm accused of doing the same thing. So I really hope that the situation here gets reconciled if that heat backstage thing is really a thing. And also, most importantly, guys, same thing we said about Sasha having heat. It's about business.
Yep.
Enzo moves merch. Kids love Enzo. And frankly, that's why I think the last month has been a bit of a waste. And I hope that something happens interesting with Enzo in the Shark Cage this weekend to make this something. Like, it is a waste. If simply people don't like him, so as a result, his character goes away and fades after how over my name is Enzo Amore is, that is a waste. Because that thing is over. That intro is over like Rover.
And that's not going anywhere. Everybody loves that, with or without Cass. And, like, even sending him to 205 Live, I think, is going to be a mistake because, you know, people accuse Enzo of not being able to work. And if you send him to 205 Live with people his size, then that's just going to expose him if he is a bad worker.
He reminds me of everyone I went to Hofstra with. That's why I love him so much.
Is that true?
Shout out to Strong Island.
Wow. They're really, by the way, and again, I want to say, I really did feel that what was supposed to happen was that Brooklyn Street fight.
I agree. I think that would have been a great gimmick match.
If you were going to keep them involved with each other for the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks since Great Balls of Fire, there's absolutely no reason that it's a big show match. I think it should have been Brooklyn Street fight with this whole week, the promo from Enzo being showing him in Brooklyn, like picking up, you know, pipes and like,
through the streets.
Yeah.
Running up and down the subway stairs.
He's going to Harlem to get Bad News Brown's pet rats. Everything you could possibly get.
You forgot him on the power rankings.
Was Bad News Brown left out of the power rankings?
What are you doing?
Yeah, that's bad. Can I tell you guys my new podcast I've been into the last couple weeks, speaking of Bad News Brown, is actually the Shivani podcast.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
I'm a big fan.
Is his voice exactly the same?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Exactly.
And then I would love it.
And he randomly says things to make fun of himself, like where he's like, he was talking. This week they did, and shout out to Goldstein, because Goldstein was the one who told me I should check out an episode a few weeks ago. And I had been really into Pritchard. And by the way, big shout out to Conrad Thompson and MLW because they do both of them. Conrad hosts them and it's on MLW. But Shivani, this week they did, or last week they did Beach of the Bash 96. Right?
Bash of the Beach.
What did I say?
Beach of the Bash.
Hashtag Beach of the Bash, everyone. Make a shirt. And if I was on Bruce Pritchard's, that would already be a shirt that they'd put out tomorrow. Bash of the Beach of the Bash. There's a shirt tomorrow. You can order it right now. No, Bash of the Beach 96. And, you know, listen, Tony, Schiavone doesn't remember absolutely everything. And you can tell that he wasn't involved in absolutely everything. He was an announcer and he was head of the announcers. That was his thing. So, like, that's what he has the most understanding of, even though he does know about talent, of course. But maybe he's not as Pritchard in terms of how Pritchard knows about everything. I wouldn't say he's quite like that, but he loves making fun of himself. And he talked about the end when he ends it with Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. But how it ends, how people really pop for that line. Yeah. And he talked about it. He's like, no, normally I would just be saying, you know, whatever. And we'll be right back with some you know, he makes fun of how he's always yelling, we'll be right back, or how the show ends. We gotta go. We gotta go.
Yeah, he always did that.
Oh, the we gotta go as the match is still happening was Mage.
Confirmed.
And I will tell you, this week was hard. I think it was in, at Bash of the Beach, Flair accompanied by woman and Miss Elizabeth. Watching that this week was was a lot to watch. All right, you know, what we should do is get right to some previewing for this Sunday.
Oh,
SummerSlam. All right, you know what? Let's take a second real quick.
It's a big wrestling event.
Let's run through NXT real quick. We don't have to go through every single match. What are we most excited about for NXT? I'll leave it to you guys.
as I told Peter last night, I have become, and I think you've mentioned him a few times on the pod, SGG, but I am a huge Aleister Black mark.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that kick, the gimmick, I'm into it.
The 100%. Entrance, the music. The look, everything.
Yeah, I'm into the whole thing, and I think that match is going to be mage.
I forgot him on the Black Power rankings too. Honorable mention, Aleister.
You know, you spoiled it. You should have done that next week. Yeah. He should have been number one as Aleister Black.
But the music, the gimmick, the style. I mean, that's real. I mean, honestly, his style is more strong style than Nakamura's.
Yeah,
is that a controversial thing to say? I think it's true.
Oh no, it's the strongest style in the business today.
100%.
Yeah,
I would not want that kick in the face from that guy. But I'm a fan. I remember we saw him for the first time in L.A. At NXT about less than a year ago.
Yeah, and now here we are.
He's pretty over.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. And I'd be surprised if he's not the champion soon.
I agree.
Now, how do you guys feel about the fact that is there a chance that Ember takes the title from Asuka and Asuka finally comes up?
There is a chance. But it's like a snowball's chance.
I actually don't think I don't think Asuka should lose the title before she comes up.
Either.
I don't think they have enough stars right now. I don't think they can lose Asuka right now.
I think she needs to come up with the championship and just hold it hostage.
I don't think hold it hostage. I think she needs to come up with the championship and still go back to NXT and work double duty right now.
That'd be mage. What we were talking about last night.
You had the suggestion of the cinch.
Yeah, like if she came up, she difficult on the mic. It's not quite there yet. She has a lot of work to do. It would be mage if someone like if Paul Heyman were to be the advocate for Asuka. Like, how unexpected and how cool would that be? How mage would that be to see? Because she is in and of herself a beast. She's unstoppable. She's amazing in the ring. She's one of the best we've ever seen.
She's going to be very, very, very special.
I think she should immediately win the title and hold it for a very long time. I think that, like, you know, Charlotte is what she is, and there's a lot of great dominant women right now, but I think it's time for like that.
No one is ready for Asuka.
Nia Jax didn't really fill that void that she was supposed to fill as the beast, you know, in the women's division. And I think despite Asuka's stature being short and whatever it is, she is very intimidating. She's excellent. The whole thing is great. She's the total package.
You also have AOP and Sanity. We said Aleister Black and Hideo Itami, Gargano and versus Andrade Almas. Is that how you say his last name?
Andrade.
Exactly. I watch him all the time.
I think they should put Gargano. I think they should put Johnny Wrestling in 205 Live. Have him win the title. He should be the new face of it. That's my opinion. He's got the physique. He's got. I mean,
And their storyline got messed up with the injury. So
I know.
I have to say this. Floating out there. Andrade does well this Sunday. Like. He's really good too, but I think the way he's been handled in NXT has not been the best. Like, he's not living up to his potential in NXT. So hopefully he gets a win. Like, love Johnny Wrestling, but one of them has to lose, and I hope it's him.
I just want to say that if he was Brazilian, his name would be pronounced Andrade, 100% confirmed. Mm. What are your thoughts?
No. I don't speak any Portuguese.
I appreciate your accuracy.
On your days in the mean streets of Harlem, no Portuguese.
No Portuguese.
Mm. Well, that's sad. It's not what it used to be up there, I'll tell you one.
My tailor is Portuguese.
Speaking of NXT,
no, man.
I think one of the biggest things to happen in NXT might happen outside the ring, because supposedly Adam Cole signed as well, and he might be the face in the crowd at this event. You know how they usually have somebody in the crowd who recently signed and is going to appear soon. People are looking to see if he shows up.
Fan of Adam Cole. Confirmed.
There's a lot. Yeah. You know what? We should have mentioned that right at the top of the show.
We had much bigger news right at the top of the show to start out with.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right about that. Now, guys, let's get into a quick, you know, we don't have to go through every single detail. Do we know Akira Tozawa and Neville, if you will?
Neville.
That's pre-show?
Yes.
Confirmed pre-show.
Yes.
That's right. The New Day. Okay, well, let's start with Akira Tozawa.
I think Neville wins it back, to be honest. I think Neville takes it back. Does that not make sense?
I like how Neville went crazy after losing the championship, and I think he needs to come close and lose again
maybe.
Go even more crazy.
Maybe that's right. Hmm. I'm still saying Neville because I love Neville. I think Neville's major.
Is anyone going to pay attention or write down what our picks are? Does it even matter, Greg? You have a pen, but do you even have paper?
This paper.
Is he just writing on a plastic cup? Greg's like when you see a homeless man walking down the street just talking to a bag of potato chips. There's nothing happening over there. There's nothing happening with the pencil.
The man has no address, confirmed. No mailing address. If you want to send him a letter, you have no idea where to send it.
He's roaming you just type in Uptown Malcolm, Harlem, New York. That's it. That's when people write Greg a letter. If you want to send him fan mail, just write Uptown Malcolm, Harlem, New York, or Uptown USA.
So what was your prediction?
I will go to Tozawa.
I'm going to go to Tozawa too.
Yeah, I'll be the outlier.
Okay, and what else do we know is pre-show? Definitive pre-show. I should know. I'm on the
six-man tag. There's a pre-show. It was announced yesterday.
The Hardy Boys and Jason Jordan versus the Miz Taraj.
How the hell did the Hardy Boys end up on? Come on.
I'll tell you how. The Revival, one member of the Revival suffers an injury again and then throws storylines in the garbage.
I get it, yeah. Confirmed.
I will. You know what, though?
Because now was the club. They were supposed to be a part of that.
Right, and
that
threw everything. Yeah, they would have had a much different role.
The card is so mage for Sunday that Matt and Jeff Hardy and the Mysteraj are on the pre-show. I mean, how...
That's a crazy pre-show when you think about it.
I mean, that could be match before the main event.
I mean, when you say Hardys and Peter Rosenberg all on the pre-show...
I mean, what are your
Hardys,
thoughts?
New Day, Peter Rosenberg...
Oh, Lita, you said?
New Day. The Usos are supposedly also on the pre-show.
WWE Hall of Famer, Peter Rosenberg, all on the pre-show. It's a very, very big deal. Okay, New Day. Well, no, let's go to that six-man tag then. The Hardy Boys and Jason Jordan versus the Miz Taraj.
Jason Jordan and the Hardys.
Dipperstein?
I'm going to say the Miz Taraj. I think they steal it. I think Miz steals it. Maybe not. You know what? I'm changing my mind on that. Hardys and Jason Jordan, for sure.
Hardys and Jason Jordan?
I'm changing my mind on that, yeah.
It is almost impossible to picture a world in which it's not that.
Yeah, I know.
Right? I will also go Hardys.
Unanimous decision on that one.
I will go Hardys and Jason Jordan. Now let's talk New Days and the Usos. New Day and the Usos. We always know this is a very challenging thing for SGG. When it comes to picking the New Day. So, SGG?
I am going to have to go with the New Day.
Does that pain you to say? Because I remember what time when you once rooted for them.
Well, I mean, I got to pick with my mind and not with my heart. You know, I'm all in on the Usos, but the New Day is poised to keep their championships. I don't think they I don't think they're going to get the championships just to give them back.
Yeah. I'm not that excited about this one. I mean, it's. I think the New Day takes it, though.
I was very excited for a time about what was happening there, and then it's something changed, you know? So, do you have a pick? You just keep it on, you keep it on the New Day?
New Day. New Day for sure.
All right. I'm going to go... it's tough. I'm going to... I'm going to go... I'm going to go Usos. I'm going to go Usos.
Why?
I don't know. What the hell's going on here?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brett the Hitman Hart has just walked in to the Cheap Heat podcast.
This is unbelievable.
There he is, the best there is, the best there was. Have a seat, Brett. Brett the Hitman Hart has showed up.
What's going on?
Stat guy Greg, have a seat over there.
I am losing my mind right now.
Did Griff produce you on what you were tell you on what you were walking into right now, that you were about to meet your biggest fan ever?
Oh, I'm completely blind. I have no idea.
SGG, what do you have to say to the Hitman?
What do you say? First of all, thank you. Like, really, thank you for everything. Like, you're my biggest. I can't even speak right now. This is incredible. I'm sitting next to the greatest, the GOAT.
I know. We all know. Everyone listening knows how you feel.
I lost friends over my love of Bret Hart.
Well, they weren't friends with me.
Exactly. Those aren't real friends. Now, Brett, you are in town for an event that is going down tonight. If you want to get to see Bret Hart in person, you have that opportunity to do so. It is going down high intensity from the NYC Arena, House of Glory. It is a big night, Jamaica, New York. Brett, you're on the show tonight.
I'm coming out and going to say a few words.
All right. Yeah. You're not going to get in the ring tonight.
Not tonight. Not that I'm expecting. You never know with wrestling. You know, it's always an open-ended thing.
That's exactly right. But there's a meet and greet, correct? A 5:30? 5:30 meet and greet if you want to meet the Hitman, Bret Hart, like SGG just did and be.
This is incredible. This is a moment.
I know. Brett, how you been, man? I haven't seen you in a little while. How you been?
I've been really good. I've been excellent. I'm on the rebound.
I follow your adventures around the world, you and your lovely wife. You always seem like you're having a good time.
Yeah, I'm loving life right now. Having a good life, just enjoying everything. I had a great summer up in Canada. I mean, the weather's been just perfect every day. We suffer up in Calgary, where I live. We suffer all winter with the 40 below weather and all that kind of stuff. But then in the summertime, it is just so nice.
Did you zero humidity? You didn't do any Hawaii this summer?
No. I sold my place in Hawaii.
Oh, really?
It got to be too much trouble.
So are you just Calgary full time now?
Just Calgary now. Yeah.
And where's your wife from?
San Francisco.
And how? So she's from Northern California. She's from generally the same neck of the woods. But obviously vastly different in Calgary. How does she like Calgary life?
She's learned to love Calgary. I guess San Francisco, if you know San Francisco and you live there all your life, it's kind of a cold place. You know, I always think San Francisco is sunny and warm. But she's used to the cold, she says, and she's never had any problem adjusting to Calgary.
And first of all, I wanted to express my condolences about your brother,
Smith,
passing away this summer. Or earlier, spring, I guess. It was a few months ago.
It was on my birthday, July.
It was July 2 months ago. So obviously, I mean, unfortunately, you know, loss is something that you have. We've talked about this before, that you've become accustomed to as time goes on, but it's never easy to lose a brother.
No, it never is. And you know, when you come from a big family, you know, it's like pulling the pin out of the bottom of the pile.
Right.
You wonder who's next, and it really caused a lot of reflection in the family. And I think, in a good way, it kind of brought a lot of the family together. You know, we're all kind of, I think it kind of stunned everybody, and to watch Smith's courageous sort of fight with cancer and everything he went through. I think we all learned a lesson, and that we learned that life's pretty short, and you better make best use of what you got and find your happiness and stuff. I think it... You know, not that death's ever a good thing, but I mean, out of Smith's death, I think we bonded a little bit as a family again, and I think everyone started to realize what's most important in life and not to lose track of that.
Well, big families do tend to have ups and downs, right? I mean, like, there's so many of you, and you can imagine when you have a small family how easy it would be to sort of have those things happen, because relationships start, people get married, people get divorced, and things happen. So when you have that many children, there, I imagine that the family has times when you're tighter and times when you're less tight.
And when it's the oldest member of the family, 12 kids, 12 real brothers and sisters from the same mom and dad, so it's not like a half family mixed together kind of thing. It's one of those, how many people got 12 kids in a family?
Right.
How crazy is that? I mean, because that's pretty crazy. But losing the oldest one of your brothers is a wake-up call for the whole family in a way where you just start to tell yourself or remind yourself to start appreciating things, because, everyone's time, sooner or later, we're all going to run out.
Yeah, well, and it's tough. You know, you lose the youngest way too soon, and now you lose the oldest, but at least how old was Smith?
Smith was 68.
68.
You know, and the sad thing about Smith, and I don't want to make a big announcement for cancer screenings and stuff like that, but it's true. Him and I both got diagnosed with prostate cancer, and he didn't get checked in time.
Really?
That's all you had to do is get checked. It's just a blood test.
Right.
So men over 40, if you haven't had a blood test and got your PSA level checked for a cancer screening for prostate cancer, you got to get it checked, because it's the kind of thing, it's pretty easy to fix. It's like breast cancer. It's one of those.
If you catch it, it's doable.
If you catch it in time, you can pretty much have a normal life. You may have to get a mastectomy or whatever, but I mean, it's better than dying.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's an important message. Now, Greg, you've gotten now 10 minutes to digest. Is there one Bret Hart subject related to wrestling that you want to ask him about? He's your hero. He's sitting right in front of you.
Well, first I have a question for you, though.
Wow.
When I said what I said earlier, did you know that he was going to be on his way here?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we talked about you this episode, because we were talking about, I said when Flair got sick, I was so worried about his health, and we're thinking, and now we're hearing positive news today. Looks like it's going the right direction. And when we had that fear that he could pass away, I had that moment of watching how people reacted to the news. And I said, it really makes you think about how iconic Flair is and how big of an impact he is, and that he could be the greatest.
And I couldn't agree that he was the greatest.
Greg, even in this moment, of course, goes, well, he knows there's only one greatest.
Right. I couldn't do it.
But yeah, I was working you 100% because I knew that Bret would be here.
And then we mentioned like the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, and Dip said that Ric Flair would be George Washington. And I said, well, if Rick is George Washington, then Bret has to be Lincoln, like 100%.
So where do you think you belong? You think you belong on the Bret? Would you put yourself on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling?
Oh yeah, I think I'd
absolutely
put myself up there and spray paint the other one.
A man who knows Bret Hart no better. No one knows Bret Hart better than Bret Hart.
But it's an interesting question of who would be the ones to go up there. Like, I don't know, you have Bruno up there, and then you have Hogan, and maybe Hogan's would be spray painting.
Yeah, Hogan's might be tough right now. But I was saying that. Wrestling's a tough game because, yeah, do you put Bruno? Do there are people who would put Lou Thesz? You know, like, where I don't know how far back you go. Or a Gorgeous George, do you just start in the modern era? Let's say it's modern era. Who would you put on the Mount Rushmore of the modern era, post-Bruno era?
Well, I agree. That's where I would start, too. I mean, because wrestling, it really shifted, huge. There's such a big change in the industry from, say, about 84 to where we are today. So, I mean, no disrespect to any of the wrestlers from before that, but they're hard to match up with the modern-day wrestlers, I don't think, as far as that exposure and all that.
Right.
My mind, I mean, you'd think Hogan would be one of the first ones. Just because of how much impact he had. And Flair would be one. I'd like to hope that I would make it in there. But
You would.
Maybe.
Easily.
Maybe, it's like whether you count Rock or Austin, or both of them would be maybe possible. Maybe that's it.
What about Cena?
Cena, he has every right to be up there too, but I don't know. He only got five heads there.
Yeah. We talk about, you know, Hogan comes up a lot on the podcast, obviously, and you guys have had different moments as history has gone on. How now do you view Hogan as the wrestler? What do you think of him as the not the guy, not the things he says otherwise, just as the wrestler?
I mean, he was such a huge personality, but I mean, I'm a guy that takes pride in the wrestling. Like, I'm a wrestler. I think I changed the industry.
I've said that here.
We know you have, Greg.
I changed it from the show business, like, to being the what you look like, which was all that mattered in the 80s, 84, 85, 86. It was all about how you looked. It didn't matter how you wrestled. But when I got my run in, like, the 90s, it shifted, and it was about the wrestling now. I wasn't the greatest character or the most flamboyant or splashiest looking or most – didn't have the greatest outfit kind of thing where you you remembered me just how I looked, the entrance, how I walked out to the ring kind of thing. But you remember my matches. And you remember the endings, the matches, the struggles. That's what I brought to wrestling. So, I mean, Hogan, as far as wrestling goes, he was really one-dimensional in the sense that he had a certain kind of match that he had every night. Every match was the same kind of match. It was 10, 12-minute match where he did the same move, same everything, same story, the hand behind the ear. And it was great. I remember, like, watching him going, this is so good. It's so exciting. And it kind of took wrestling in a whole different direction. But looking back on it today, you watch the matches back and you go, like, if you get a Hulk Hogan's greatest matches DVD or something. It's like they're all kind of the same match.
Well, I will say this, though, about Hogan. My real respect for Hogan in terms of what he was capable of kind of came more from the NWO thing in terms of seeing how over he was as a heel, too. I mean, people really hated Hogan.
Yeah,
now, I'm not saying he changed his matches. He kind of just reversed the matches a bit. But he was pretty good, I thought, as a heel.
Yeah, he was. He certainly had a lot of heat, and that whole NWO thing is what it's hard to believe. When I go back to those days, like I can remember I took time off, and Shawn had the belt, and he was the champion. But I remember, like, Austin was red hot, and Shawn and Undertaker and myself, I was coming back part-time and stuff, working at that time. I remember we were the first time we started losing the WCW in the ratings. And I can remember watching Nitro and going, and then I'd watch Raw, like flip back and forth like fans do. And I go, there's no difference. There's such a huge difference. Like WWF was always, to me, so much better than even the worst wrestling on at that time period, 96, 97. Worst WWF matches were better than half the stuff they were doing in WCW. And WCW, you know, they lucked into some good storylines, NWO being one of them, that kind of didn't matter what they did, but it was more fun to watch Hogan as a bad guy and all those guys that came out with him, and Kevin Nash and Scott.
Well, and let's be honest, those three stars were all three WWF stars.
Yeah, but they drew all the attention away from some pretty serious guys that were in their prime, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Undertaker, Stone Cold. You know, we had some really, and Mankind, when I look back on them now, there's no comparison between the two shows. I mean, Nitro was never anywhere near as good as Raw. I knew that when I went there, and it's true because it just wasn't, and they never had any kind of organization.
Was that hard for you to go there, and now you're a part of this show? You had to go there, and you're making good money, but you know the product isn't as good.
Yeah, no, but I went and I tried. It's like, I'm going to do my part. I'm gonna really kind of try to hit a home run every night for these guys and try to make a difference and show them what I can offer. And it was just so disappointing to see how chaotic and clueless is a good word. They were a bunch of imbeciles. Like Eric Bischoff, maybe one of the stupidest guys I ever knew in wrestling. They had no. He was just such an idiot.
tell me how you feel, Brett. Don't go back here on JP.
He was the stupidest guy in the world to be running WCW. He had no ability. He had no sense. He didn't know a good idea from a bad idea. He was just – I always use that example, like that little guy behind the Wizard of Oz the guy that's behind the curtain. Making all the noise and stuff.
Yeah.
That's Eric Bischoff. He didn't have a clue what if you had the greatest match in the world, if you gave him an Iron Man match with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels every night, he wouldn't even know what the hell it was.
Well, so is that ultimately where you think you're comparing that to a wrestling genius in Vince McMahon?
Yes.
And that's ultimately how it played out.
Yeah. And it was just a question of, this is a matter of time. I mean, I think there's a lot of guys that could have competed with Vince mentally. Like, Vince had a lot of great ideas. There's lots of great guys. There's lots of guys that had good ideas about running wrestling. But WCW, I don't know. It was like a corrupted system where they had a bunch of idiots in charge and you couldn't change it.
Do you stay in touch with Vince at all?
Yeah, I do. He texts me on my birthday, that kind of stuff. Or when my brother passed, he sent me a nice text. And we stay in touch when we need to. Like if I got something I need, or if I need pictures for a story, or anything I need from him, they kind of make it happen for me pretty fast.
I want to ask you one tough thing that I hadn't thought about asking you, but now it popped in my head, and I would like to bring it up because I'm such a huge fan of Owen. I've talked about that with you before. I know the situation with the family, and his widow is a complicated one. Do you think there will ever be any sort of peace and we'll see Owen in the WWE Hall of Fame?
I hope so. Yeah, I really do, because I don't understand the... we all took Owen's tragic death pretty hard. And there was a few years where it was pretty touchy as far as, like, it was a sensitive topic. But as time fades, you start to soften, or at least I have, and I go... there's a lot of fans that love them. Why are we burying his legacy and everything he was and stood for? Like even that video they did about a year ago, they brought a DVD set. But it was all so closely, like they couldn't use certain pictures, they couldn't use, and no help, no input from the family, from Owen's side of the family. You know, and I think, I'm not anyone to want to exploit Owen like that, but I really think that he has every right to be remembered for what he contributed and what kind of a wrestler and a guy he was, and how much the wrestlers loved him, how much the fans loved him, and for Martha to stand there and that's his widow,
mm-hmm.
and just refuse to let anybody ever enjoy anything about Owen ever again, anything to do with wrestling. It's like not she it's she's so obtuse and sort of narrow-minded. And I've grown where I resent that. I think why are you making such a lousy deal for everybody? Like everybody wants to remember him, and they all love him. And it's not like a disrespect. It's a respect that you're hiding from and stopping everyone from enjoying his legacy and remembering him.
I'm sorry, Greg.
I was going to ask, did she have those feelings toward the industry like when he was alive, or is that something that came about?
It was only after he passed, but she probably... in her mind, I can remember Martha Owens' widow pounding her hands on the ring apron as a wrestling fan, watching me when I was a kid. And so she was a wrestling fan, and Owen loved wrestling. And
well, that part has changed a lot, right? Like, I read Martha's book, and obviously, the feelings of the widow is incredibly important. All of us could agree, right? That goes without saying. And I understand the level. I mean, I can't even understand, but you can imagine the level of pain this has been and has never changed. Her kids lost their dad, right? And she's impacted by it more than anyone. However, there's an image that's sort of been painted over time of like Owen really wants it out, and really it's kind of made it look like he didn't love the business. And as his brother, as his older brother who he looked up to a lot, do you think that's inaccurate? And in fact, Owen, if he had his choice, would even with how he passed, would still love wrestling?
I see. That's how I see it. I see it like Owen was no different than me. And, I would come home, and probably like you, when you get home later today, you always bitch about your job.
I bitch about everything.
I had to go. I spend all day there today, and I had to do this, or I had to. It's part of your job. Everyone complains about their jobs. So Owen complained a lot about his job, because you do. You just do about you. Anybody does. And but at the same time, and I know how Owen felt a lot of times, like and I felt like leaving for the airport that first day. You're on the road now for 2 months or 6 weeks or something like that, and you're looking over at Owen, and he's like bummed out, and it's like we're flying to somewhere, and it's like, you know, you're goodbye happiness in the whole world kind of thing. And now I'm off to work for 2 months. I'm playing this character wrestler, you know, and it's like this life you have. But, and you dread it sometimes. You really do, especially when you're leaving, like the plane's rolling down the tarmac at the Calgary airport and you're leaving on this sort of work trip kind of thing. You know, you do get resentful and kind of, you know, and it's easy to go, he was always hated going, and it's like we all do. But the second those plane leaves, it's like you become this other person. And Owen loved that person. He loved being on the road. He loved, I believe today, if nothing had happened to Owen, I believe he'd still be working for WWF. I believe that Owen would have eventually become an announcer like JBL or Michael Cole. He was good at that. I remember he used to step in and kind of did some of that stuff. And I can remember him telling me, he goes, I like doing that stuff. And I'm like, so I think Owen would have found a nice niche for himself in WWF or WWE. And we wouldn't be talking about this stuff. It would have been, Owen was a good enough wrestler that he might have become champion one time, might have been a world champion eventually.
Since we're talking ifs, if Owen hadn't passed, and you'd think he would still be with the WWE, WWF, do you think he would have been able to broker a deal that would see you back in the WWF?
Talk to me about it. But yeah, I think he could have for sure, because I end up going anyway.
Right. Owen, it would have happened sooner.
Owen would have, I don't think it would have happened sooner. Owen would have, I remember him talking to me one time about trying to see if I'd come back. And I remember him talking to me one time about, he goes, well, everything's changed and we want to bring you back. And, you know, I just was so opposed to that at that time. But, you know, you soften. I think it took a long time for me to kind of mellow out about it. And now when I look back on the fact that me and Sean buried the hatchet, best thing in the world. Best thing to do.
Felt very freeing, right?
And anyone out there that's got a serious grudge or hate on somebody that they really, you know, the best thing to do, if you can, find the courage to make peace with it, because it'll set you free. And I think that's what I always thought when I made that truce with Sean, that I was going to regret it. That about 6 months later, I'd go, I'd like to punch that guy right out.
It was the opposite?
All start again. But I sort of opened the door into forgiveness and kind of, you know, let's forgive and move on. And you know what? It was such a, what I saw in Sean, like how much he appreciated, like it was like somebody taking their foot off his head kind of thing. Like he felt finally had peace and was happy and kind of good with me again, joking around. And I just remember like a year later going, that was a really good thing to do. It did good for everybody. Good for me. Good for Sean. Got a lot of bad blood out of the way. And
do you ever see him or chat with him at all?
No, but we text each other the same thing on birthdays, or, you know, he'll wish me a Merry Christmas or something like that. And yeah, it's better. It's like, why not? Why not have that than all the hostility and hate?
There's been a lot of conversation about recently about like the real life heat between Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss. And I really wanted them to have this match at SummerSlam, which they're having. And I talked to Alexa, who obviously, you know, she's a kid and relatively new to wrestling. And I'm asking her about how you try to handle doing this. But no one knows better than you how, when you have real heat with someone, can you tell us a little bit about how you harness it and turn it into great work? Because it seems like such a challenge to have to be in such close quarters with someone you really don't get along with.
Well, it's not easy to do. I mean, because work is one thing. Like, it's like when you're working with somebody or you're wrestling somebody, it's all about trust and respect. I mean, you have to have this trust for each other and respect, even if you don't like each other. I've wrestled lots of wrestlers that I didn't like, but I trusted them. And that's a really important aspect of the industry, is how much you trust. You may not like them, but can you trust them?
And I'm sure, and there were people you liked who you didn't trust. Did that ever happen? A guy you like outside the ring, but you're like, oh, I don't want to get in with
some guys that, you know, are not, you know, aren't necessarily going to be that. They're not going to help you out too much out there. They have limitations as wrestlers, and you may like them, but they may not. You know, they may be stiff, and they may be forgetful, or guys that don't have good timing or good professionalism in there. And you got to work around it. I mean, I can remember wrestling Berserker one time in Calgary, which is always like, gee, that took me so long to get back up to Calgary. And I was finally had a championship match, and that was with Berserker, which is
I always felt uncomfortable watching Berserker
kill
work.
Calgary, kill the town off and put me with Berserker. I never worked with him, so I remember he threw me in the ropes, of all things, for, and he's a heel. He threw me in for a drop kick, hit me right in the stomach, right like in the pelvic bone with a drop, both feet, drop kick as hard as he could. Knocked all the wind out of me for, and almost broke my hips. Like, he really potatoed the heck out of me. And I remember, I loved Berserker. He was one of my favorite guys. But I remember he really, really hurt me, and the match was terrible, and everything was, I remember I came back, and it was like, I remember, I think it was George Scott, came, or George Steele came up to me, and was like, how was it? And he's like, it was good.
right.
It's coming along, you know, and because I love them too much to say he was the shits, which he probably was. But, you know, there's examples like that, but then there's guys that, like Sean, you know, that was a really good worker, that would have a pissy attitude sometimes, and you just have to work around. I think with wrestling, and going back to your question, is that you always have to be professional in there. Like, you know, the thing that people always forget about, or they don't remember when they bring up the screw job and the whole issues with me and Shawn Michaels, was that it really, the whole tension, everything that happened between me and Shawn, I was always pretty, like, pretty friendly with Shawn, even though he was getting more isolated from, you know, ostracized by all the other wrestlers in the dressing room. He had a bit of an attitude problem. But I was on the road or going home a lot, so I was only sort of around it a little bit. And, you know, I remember it was in San Jose, and a couple of weeks before the screw job happened, but maybe a month or so. And I went up to Sean's when I first heard that we were wrestling at Montreal. It's like, first heard, you and Sean at Survivor Series. It's like, how's that going to go? So I see Sean, he's refereeing a triple threat match with me, Steve Austin, and Triple H in San Jose, and he refereed it, and he came back into my dressing room after the match, and this is where the whole thing started. And I remember I walked up to him, and I thought, I'm just going to clear the air with Sean, because we had some tensions. And I said, Sean, I said, this one should know. And we had a little scuffle in Hartford about 6 months before that, and I haven't really seen much of him since then. And I came up to him, I said, Sean, I said, I heard it's you and me at Survivor Series. And he goes, yeah, I heard that today, too. And it's like, I said, I just want you to know. I said, I have no problem dropping the belt. I have no problem. I'll lose to you any way they want. Whatever they want is no problem for me. And I said, I just want you to know that whatever happened between us, I said, when we step in the ring, I said, I'm always going to be a professional. I said, I never change. I'll never take liberties or punch you, on, you know, hurt you on purpose. Or I said, I pride myself on being an absolute professional in the ring. And just so you know, I want you to know that you'd always be safe in the ring with me, despite whatever has happened in the past. But I remember in saying all that to Sean, I remember he looked at me with a straight face, and he goes, I appreciate that, but I just want you to know that I'm not willing to do the same thing for you. And that's, you know, when they say, why did the screw job happen? That's why it happened. Right there, that moment when a guy, when I'm the champion and I come up and say, hey, I'm happy, you have no problem dropping the belt to you. For you to say to me, I'm not willing to do the same thing for you. That
now trust is now trust
that
is gone.
Trust is not there anymore, and
respect must be gone too.
You
know, like,
yeah, it was. And so when you say, why was he so stubborn about not losing in Canada and all? It wasn't about Canada. It wasn't about losing. It was about respect.
Yeah,
and that's what. And people say, oh, I saw something on the internet about that Gene Oakland being interviewed by somebody, and you know, Bret Hart should have just done what he was told. Now, you know, I say all those guys can kiss my ass because they never walked in Bret Hart's shoes. They don't know what it was like to be me. They weren't there in the dressing room when Sean said that to me. And if you were any kind of professional wrestler that had any kind of self-dignity, you wouldn't let somebody talk to you like that, especially if somebody that wasn't physically going to be able to do anything with someone like me.
And with all due respect, too, like, I said this before here too. You made Shawn Michaels. So
okay, Greg.
Honestly,
you're gonna bury him again. I mean, let's say he's Shawn Michaels. Brett, you agree? Shawn's an all-time great at this point, correct?
He was a great wrestler, but he had moments of unprofessionalism.
So what do you think about that, Greg? Can you handle that?
I didn't hear the word Shawn Michaels an all-time great wrestler. I mean,
he said he's a great. He thinks he's a great wrestler.
Not an all-time great, and definitely not top 10. Not in the Mount Rushmore. And it still doesn't change my point that this you made Shawn Michaels. I mean, I'm sorry.
I think their careers were very beneficial to each other.
Bret Hart had amazing matches with everybody. You heard about his classic with Berserker. he could have done it with anybody. It didn't have to be Shawn Michaels, but they needed Bret Hart.
Dipperstein, you said you have a question. It's very rare. Dip, please.
Yeah, the one thing I always when I've heard interviews and I get like emotional about things that you said in the past, the one thing that stands out to me is when you talk about Mr. Perfect and Kurt Hennig and what a great worker he was and what a friend to you he was. And I always wanted to hear more about that because he was one of my favorite. Like you, of course, and him were like two of my first favorites.
Well, he was of all the guys I can think of that I could go back and have one match with. He'd be the first one, I think. Him or Owen. Him and Owen were very similar.
They were similar in a long sense way.
We could go out and they could parachute us into the ring without ever. Like we don't even have to talk to each other.
Yeah,
we could just show up in the ring and it's like. And the referee could say, we need an hour. And it would be like easiest hour you ever do in your life. Like, well, I could wrestle Kurt in my sleep. In fact, I probably did most of the time. whenever we wrestled each other, we had such good matches, and we would really sweat. And really, you lose a lot of fuel in those hour matches and stuff like that. And I was wrestling back in those days. I did about a 20-minute Broadway with him for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Seemed like every couple of days I was doing a Broadway with Kurt when he was Intercontinental Champion. And, you know, we just had such great chemistry all the time. Always had a lot of fun in the ring. And it was always so easy. And he was always so safe that we just had that natural ability that you could just throw us together and with no planning, we wouldn't even have to talk to each other and still give you the best match on the card.
Where do you think that came from? Like you both being second-generation wrestlers or just being so close outside the ring?
Both. Just the respect growing up. Like, you learn so much as a kid growing up. And any second generation or third generation wrestlers learn so much just watching. As a kid, you may not think you're learning wrestling, but by the time you're about 16, 18, like, I had a pretty good idea about how pro wrestling worked. And then almost, like, right from the day one, like, I remember the guys that trained me going, geez, he wrestles like he's been doing this all his life. And I think probably Kurt was the same, and lots of guys that were second or third generation wrestlers just have that because you've been watching it. You sort of know, you get it faster.
Was he close with Owen? I remember in the beginning, obviously Mania 5 and everything, when Owen was Blue Blazer and Kurt had worked that program with him at the at the onset at the very very beginning. Was that the beginning of the friendship for you guys, or was that a circle of friendship there?
I think he always, for one, the axe, Kurt's father was, got started out working for my dad in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like your dad got a job with my dad and,
right.
Had a start. So Kurt always had a lot of respect for my dad, the family, the brothers. And when he wrestled Owen was a guy, everyone knew Owen was really talented and he was a really good kid and a good wrestler. But they weren't really doing anything with him. And then when he wrestled him, I think if you watch that match, Kurt gave Owen one of the better matches he ever had back in
those
days.
It was a great match.
Hey, listen, Greg, last question. We got to wrap.
Last question.
With the Hitman.
You mentioned Kurt's dad working for your dad. Did your fathers ever have a match? Because I remember, like, SummerSlam 91, you guys are jawjacking each other, and there was a discrepancy about whose father was the better wrestler.
Well, it was a good little joke. Like, we had a good laugh about it. But the truth was, I think my dad was quite a bit older than my dad was like the next generation before Kurt's dad. So there's a fair gap between their ages, even though they're both old timers.
And your dad did always think that he could ultimately stretch anyone at any point in his life.
Well, he might have. He might have stretched him in the basement, but I don't think he ever worked with him like on a territorial sense. Like, by the time. Funny enough, like when my dad left New York, he wrestled here in the 40s, 48.
He met your mom here, right?
I met my mom in Brooklyn and married her. And, you know, the thing about my dad was that once he got back to Canada, because he had the license in his name, the promoter couldn't wrestle. That was the rule. The promoter had to be a promoter and wasn't allowed to be on the cards. So my dad, who was a big star, or at least in that sense. Was a polished wrestler from and a reputation and all that. Came back and had to kind of put his reputation and everything in the file and just be the boss with a suit and tie and all that kind of stuff. So he didn't have a lot of matches with guys that came along, like Kurt's dad and stuff after. But he certainly, I remember my father used to make a lot of beer, you know, homemade beer in the dressing room or down in the basement. They had a big room filled with beer, and the wrestlers would drink beer, and they would go in there and wrestle, and my dad would, I don't think he was a big beer drinker, but he made it. I think my mom was a beer drinker.
Hey, guys, House of Glory Wrestling tonight, 5:30, meet and greet with Bret Hart, a great night of wrestling. Brian, thank you very much for making this happen, man. Do you want to go grab the mic real quick and just tell them who's on the car, what they can get tonight real fast if they come out to House of Glory?
UFC Hall of Famer, Stephen Bonner, Matt Riddle, Amazing Red, Anthony Gangone, Cam Broway, House of Glory. If you want to get any information, go to HOGWrestling.net and Instagram and Twitter, HOG Wrestling.
Dude, thank you very much for the event, for putting on the great wrestling here in the city.
No problem.
And for bringing Brett through. Brett, you know you're my favorite. It's always a pleasure to see you, my friend.
Always. I was meaning to give you a call, so it's good to see
you. Hey, you've always been a great guy for me, and every time I've ever reached out, I appreciate it. You're the greatest. Best there is, best there was, best there ever will be. Bret Hart, ladies and gentlemen. And for the rest of our Cheap Heat predictions for a SummerSlam, you'll catch them later. There'll be another episode for you tomorrow. Good night. Stay major.